Welcome to True Crime and Spending Time. I'm Kirstie.
And I'm Josh.
And we are back for our second episode. However, this is going to be a mini episode because we are crazy and started a podcast before the holidays.
Yeah, we didn't think that went out very well. But we hope everyone had a good holiday season. Happy New Year to everyone, and welcome back.
Yeah, our life is so busy. I don't know what we were thinking, trying to start one before the holiday. And we've came back and tried to record a few times, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah, we actually tried to record before Christmas Eve. And I don't know what we were thinking then, because I had to work Christmas Eve.
I did too.
You had to work Christmas Eve. Yeah, I don't know what we were thinking, but we were trying to get something out there. It's just been so hectic, we didn't have a chance. So this week, you will get this little mini episode. Plus, we're going to go ahead and release a full episode later on in the week.
Yep. So you get two episodes this week because we want to thank everyone for their support from our first episode, because we have got more listens than we could have ever imagined.
Yeah, I really want to take a second to thank everyone, because I think between just the different platforms that were available for podcasting and YouTube, we were over 500 on our very first episode, and we were not imagining that was going to happen for a very long time.
Again, we really, really appreciate it. But with that being said, let's go ahead and get into the episode. The episode is about Karen Rodriguez and Miriam Rodriguez Martinez. And the reason that this is a mini episode is because, unfortunately, there's not a lot of information about this case, story, whatever you want to call it. It's very interesting, but there's not a lot of facts. We have several sources, but unfortunately, even those sources have conflicting information, and some of our sources are actually publications from Mexico that we had to do a Google Translate on to be able to get some of our information.
Yeah, and as hard as you try, there's just some stuff that's lost in Google Translation, and it's pretty accurate, but there were some pieces of information that we had from the New York Times, say, that was a completely opposite story from what we can find in some of the publications from Mexico. And we're leaning a lot heavier on some of this information on those, because they were publications from the area where that this actually took place. But it's a really, really cool story that needs to be told, and there's just not a lot out there on this right now.
Yeah, this was actually a suggestion in one of the true crime groups that we are in, and I had never heard anything about this case. I immediately knew I wanted to cover it, but this is like the third time we've tried to record this, and we could have made it into a full episode, but really, to do it justice, it really just needs to be a mini episode.
Yeah, because with the information that we have, there's enough stuff to tell this story, but not enough stuff to really dive into all of the things that we would normally dive into on an episode when it comes to evidence and things like that.
And there's some details that we would like to omit. So the case starts in 2012 when Karen is abducted by a local drug cartel in her hometown of Tamaulipas, Mexico. And this is the first point where we start getting conflicting information. Some of the articles say that she was 14, some say that she was 16, and some say that she was 20. So we're not 100% sure on how old Karen was, but was it 20 was the consistent age?
I think that was a little more consistent, and I think with some of the stuff that we found, it was kind of consistent that maybe she was taken while she was in or driving a vehicle, something to that effect. Mm-hmm. We saw that in multiple places, so that's kind of what seems to be the consistent story, is that she was taken around the age of 20 while driving a vehicle.
Okay, that's what, yeah, so we're going to go with that she was 20, but again, we've got conflicting information. So like I said, in 2012, she was abducted. Then over the years, the weeks and years after her abduction, her mother, Miriam, would get ransoms that said if she wanted to see her daughter alive, she must pay them. These ransoms could range anywhere from $500 to $2,000. And Miriam was a business owner, so she would sell as much inventory as she could to pay the ransoms. And if she was not able to do that, she would take out loans to pay them.
It was actually during one of these calls when we get our first bit of information from one of our sources that she was on the phone call, and while she was pleading for them to release her daughter and they were demanding the ransom, she actually heard over a radio the name of one of the abductors. So Miriam takes that piece of information, and like any good Facebook stalker with a motive, she goes through and she starts looking for everyone that she can find with that first name. Eventually, she comes across a picture of a guy that she recognizes. So she goes to his profile, she starts going through all of the pictures that she can find, and she comes across a picture where that there's a girl in the background. In the background, the girl's wearing a uniform. She recognizes the uniform from a ice cream shop that's about 2 hours outside of town. So Miriam drives and she stays and stakes out this ice cream shop for weeks, and eventually the guy shows up. After the guy shows up, she follows him back home to his neighborhood, and in order to prevent any type of suspicions from being placed on her and why she's asking questions, she fakes a poll of the neighborhood. And during this poll, she goes around just house to house asking these questions and asking for information. And then she comes to his house and she's able to ask these questions without suspicion. She gains his information that way. And that's kind of where her story really starts.
That's crazy. That's some insane level private investigating stuff.
Absolutely.
Her Facebook stalking, though, is totally something I could and probably actually already do. I totally missed my calling as a detective.
Yeah, I mean, a private investigator may not be out of the question in the future. You never know.
I know, right? I'm pretty good at what I do, unofficially.
Yeah, you have your own Facebook version of, what is it, the 7 degrees of separation or whatever it is. You know how I know Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. So Miriam finds this guy, and she starts trying to figure out what she can do. But of course, she gets little help from local law enforcement. And I get it. This is a local drug cartel that she is trying to bring down. She's trying to get them arrested, and I don't blame local law enforcement for being nervous, because you don't mess with drug cartels.
No, I mean, there are plenty of cases and reports of the mass murders and things like that occur. So the police and even state officials are literally terrified of these people, but not Miriam.
Nope. Miriam is not afraid, and she takes matters into her own hands. In order to help take down her daughter's abductors, she starts to dye her hair, disguise herself as a pollster, healthcare worker, and an election official to get information on the gang members, such as their names and addresses, and then she tracks them down one by one.
Yeah, and it was very interesting to me because as she was gaining this information, she would go far enough as to become friends with close family members of theirs that would not suspect that that's what she was up to. I mean, she was just, you know, whoever she was to them, whatever, you know, alias that she was using at that time, and she would become close to them to gain information on these people.
Yeah, she would learn, you know, things about their childhood to make it look like she's not suspicious. Because she was dealing with very dangerous people. A group of violent offenders. According to The Economist, between 2006 and 2016, 5,563 people disappeared at the hands of the local gangs in Tamaulipas. These gangs were feuding over control of the main drug route to the United States. So the gang members were responsible for the disappearance of a lot of people in the area. And unfortunately, Miriam's daughter Karen was a part of that statistic. These guys were bad guys, but Miriam did not care. She took down 10. That's right, 10 of her daughter's abductors from the years 2014 to 2017. 10 people, that's a lot for one woman to be able to take down from a drug cartel or just anybody in general.
Absolutely. And I mean, she was doing her own investigation without a lot of help from anyone on the outside. And because of that, I mean, she was putting in effort nonstop. I mean, this was a lifestyle for her, basically, because she was bound and determined that one way or the other, she was going to find her daughter. And she was going to find the people that were responsible.
Yeah. And she would hunt them down and hold them at gunpoint until law enforcement arrived. I really urge you all to Google her, but make sure that you Google Miriam Rodriguez Martinez. Use all three of her names so that way you can get the pictures of her. But if you Google her, you're going to notice that she is this cute little lady who has a small stature, who doesn't look, you know, intimidating at all. And wasn't she like 56 when most of this happened?
At the time that one of the stories in particular, you mentioned holding someone at gunpoint, and I know you're going to get into that story, but she was definitely 56 at the time of that. And that was consistently reported. At age 56, she is tracking these guys down and holding them at gunpoint.
That's what I'm saying, is she doesn't look intimidating, but that's almost part of the appeal. They wouldn't expect her to be the cause of their fall. You know what I mean? Like,
no, if you see her, anyone that has a mother that age that has wore the, you know, kind of bigger earrings and, you know, the flowered looking shirts and things like that, that's something that you're going to see in some of these photographs. I mean, she just looked like a normal woman her age.
Well, but she wasn't. So one of the stories that just blows my mind is how she was able to track down one of her daughter's abductors. I got this from the Daily Mail. She had received a tip about one of the abductors working at the Mexican-U.S. border selling sunglasses. So she immediately gets her jacket on, takes off, and I think when I Googled it, it was like an 8-hour drive or something like that from where she was at. Do you remember?
Yeah, it was something. It was a pretty long drive from where she was to the Texas border.
Yeah, so she gets there, she grabs her gun, she takes off. When she gets there, he's supposed to be selling flowers because he's a florist. Well, she's looking and she doesn't see him. And then she notices that he is actually selling sunglasses that day. The article says that she got too excited and got too close and that he noticed her. He takes off running and Miriam takes off after him. and she runs him down, and it says she was 56, and tackles him. She then takes her gun and holds it to him and says, "If you move, I'll shoot you."
I mean, what do you even say about that? I mean, that story and that report in itself shows you the determination that she had and the toughness that she had. I mean, would you do that?
I would like to say that I would, but I don't. If it was for my children, probably. But I definitely am not as brave as she is.
No, I mean, this is not just someone who has done something and you've been able to track them down. This is a cartel. This yeah. is a massive group of criminals that is known to do terrible things. And she's standing up to them and she is figuring this stuff out so that she can find her daughter and get justice for her daughter.
Well, the article goes on to say that she detained him for nearly an hour until police arrived. So she was able to keep him there for an hour and he didn't fight back. So he obviously was intimidated.
I mean, I honestly don't care how tough you are. If someone's standing there holding you at gunpoint and they're willing to do it for that long, I mean, I believe that I'm going to stand there too. I don't care how tough he thinks he is. She seemed like she meant business.
No, that's true. However, unfortunately, in 2014, some of her daughter Karen's remains were found scattered at a ranch in Mexico. She was identified by her femur.
Yes, they actually found her remains in graves that the cartel is known to use. And along with her remains in just this one grave, they collected the bones, they kept them separated, and they actually sent them off to the United States for testing to try to identify some of these victims. And along with her remains, there was also the remains of a 2-year-old, a pregnant woman, multiple young men, and unfortunately, her daughter Karen.
Yeah, and that's heartbreaking because she paid all of the ransoms that were requested of her. But if you remember, I said that she tracked down the abductors from 2014 to 2017.
She was still continuing this and was even more determined to continue this after they found her daughter's remains. And that was pretty consistent across the board. There were multiple reports that she never gave up because these people were getting arrested between those years. I think one of the last ones was even arrested in 2017. And to be clear, we just know that kind of her journey started with the ransom call, but we don't know how long that they were doing these ransom calls after this happened and how long all that was going on. So she very easily could have been getting these, did you say earlier, weeks to months? Mm-hmm. That was going on, and we know that it was 2 years later that she found her daughter's remains. And I do know that it was reported everywhere that even after they had buried the remains that they were able to find, that she still continued this search. So we weren't, or at least I wasn't, able to find exactly when she started her investigations personally, but I do know that she started them sometime around one of the ransom calls, and that she continued this even after those remains were buried.
Yeah. But during her road to justice, Miriam founded and headed up many support groups and advocacy groups for families of missing persons in the area.
Yeah, which is really amazing because this is a area that is so, how would you say, under the thumb of everything that's going on with the drug cartel. They're so mm-hmm. afraid of everything that's going on, and they're afraid for their lives. And there were so many people that had disappeared that there was never any justice received for. And for her to be brave enough to stand up against that and to have people in the community start to support her and to tell their stories, and for all of them to finally get a voice and to start standing up to the local government and the country government. I mean, there were different reports of her even speaking to people in the federal government about stuff that was going on to try to get justice for these people. And for that to happen is just an amazing thing, to stand up in the face of all that fear and to try to do something and to make a change.
You know, we keep talking about how dangerous it is, but it really, really is. I mean, it's terrifying to think that one person was trying to take on this entire drug cartel. But things always have a way of coming back.
Yeah, unfortunately, at some point, and there may have been a date, and I just miss it, but at some point there was a jailbreak of quite a few inmates from one of the prisons that was close by to her area. And at least two of the men that escaped during that were two of the men from the cartel that was her daughter's abductors and murderers that was able to escape during the jailbreak. So,
two people she put in there.
Two people that she was responsible for putting in there, yes. So with that being said, we know that at least a couple of those guys got out of jail. And on May the 10th of 2017, which was Mother's Day, at approximately 10:21, a truck was reported to have followed her home from her place of business. At 10:36, when she arrived home, just a few short minutes later, she gets out of her vehicle and she was shot 12 times.
This was very heartbreaking for me because when doing research, this is not what I was hoping. I was hoping for a happy ending. But realistically, knowing all of the details, it would have surprised me if the cartel didn't retaliate in some form.
Yeah. And it was reported, and based on her as a person and things that we know she did, I believe this. It was reported that when they went to get her, because an ambulance was called, and about 10 minutes after they left her house, she had actually passed away. But it was reported that when they got there to get her, that she had her hand in her purse clutching her gun. And I believe that. I mean,
oh,
she,
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, she had it with her everywhere she went. And just the woman that she was and the bravery and the courage that she showed, I truly believe that she was not going to go down without a fight.
Yeah, that's me too. I believe that she was going to go down fighting for her life no matter what. It just didn't work out that way. And yeah, it's so heartbreaking.
It really is. And this is one of those things. I mean, you never want to take justice into your own hands. But in this particular case, she didn't have a choice. If she was going to try to get any type of justice for her daughter, she had to do what she had to do. And that's exactly what she did. Now, I know when it comes to her murder, it happened on May the 10th. I know that there was an arrest made of the person who was driving the truck that followed her that night on May the 14th, just 4 days after the event took place. On May the 18th, there were five more people arrested, but they refused to talk, so they were later released. On June the 17th, there was one of the people that they thought was really responsible for kind of planning this. And that person, they were really after to try to track down everyone involved. But unfortunately, that person was killed while they were serving the arrest warrant. There was another suspect that was arrested in 2017. Never found the exact date on that. But out of all the people that they arrested, all the information that they were able to find that I could find reports on, only two people received sentences from her murder.
That's crazy.
The driver, which was the first person that they had arrested, and the last suspect that they arrested. One of those received a 10-year sentence, and the other received a 15-year sentence for her murder.
And that's crazy to me because there's so many more people. She took down 10 of her daughter's abductors. So my thought is how many people were in on Miriam's death, because you know everybody's gonna want to be in on retaliating against the woman who tried to take down their cartel.
Yeah, and I do know that the federal police had made a statement that the last time that they had any information, they never believed that they got the people that were actually, for lack of better words, I guess, the brains of the operation, or the people who really planned her execution. I mean, basically is what it was. And I know that they are still looking for those people. To this day, there are still quite a few people that were responsible for her daughter's abduction and murder that are still in jail because of what she did.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. And when we first started doing this case, when we first started talking about it in the beginning, we kept referring it to the real life Taken, like the movie with Liam Neeson. And that's kind of how I still feel about it. While in the movie Taken, he's trying to find his daughter, Miriam still done all of this even after when she knew her daughter was not alive. So I still, it just amazes me because I still think this is like the real life Taken. And I do think that this story should get a lot more exposure than what it does. This woman's story needs to be told. Like, I think it needs to have its own movie, book, or something.
Yep. I'm just waiting on it to come out. And that's part of the reason that we really wanted to do a episode, or at least a mini episode on this story, is because we believe it needs to be out there. Because she died in 2017, but the first reports that I could find about it anywhere in the U.S. was just end of November, beginning of December of last year.
Of 2020.
So, I mean, this is a story that happened years ago that's just now starting to come to surface here, but it's something that needs to be heard and something that people need to talk about, because these things are still happening and they're still having to deal with it in this area every day.
Yeah. I mean, I hope that it gets the exposure that it needs. While this story is full of tragic events, it's also a true testament to the heart and soul that Miriam had. She put her life on the line to get justice for her daughter, Karen. She had nothing to lose, but everything to gain in finding the abductors. Because for her, that was getting justice. Miriam left behind a legacy, and the work that she helped start is still going on today. We had different reports of different people helping with the groups, but we were able to confirm that those advocacy groups are still going strong today. While it is a tragic story, it's also a heartwarming story just hearing about this mother who cared so much about her daughter, and she just wanted to help not only her family get closure, but also help other families in the area.
Yeah, and she was not just an advocate for this particular cause. There are also reports of her having advocacy groups for local businesses and places that were being taken up from outside businesses at their local markets. And she wanted the families in their local town to be able to have access to those, I guess you would call them stalls or
booths
at their local market, because she wanted them to be able to succeed and to do things. There were also multiple things on immigration that she was reported to have been an advocate for and things like that. So she made her life about making a difference, and it's a story that everyone needs to hear.
Yep, I completely agree. Well, thank you for listening to episode 2 of True Crime and Spending Time. We are sorry that it took so long to get our second episode up and that it's just a mini episode. But on a plus note, you get 2 this week.
And then after that, I think we're going to try to be pretty consistent around Thursdays or Fridays.
Yeah.
Thursday's what we're shooting for. If it doesn't come out till Friday, please understand. We have 5 kids. We have jobs. Not only do we have full-time jobs, but she's also a photographer. We're trying to get things straightened up around our new house that we moved into this past year. So we have a lot going on. But we do really appreciate you guys for everything that you have done, for the love and support that you've shown us. And please keep giving us feedback, because we love it. And I know that the sound quality may be off, or it's unscripted, so you can't say the script doesn't run well because it's literally a conversation. I think the little last part that she had read was something that she kind of wrote from the heart and wanted to make sure that it got in there. So it's not going to be perfect, but we're putting what we have into this because it's something that we love. And it's about us getting to spend time together doing something and spending time with you. So we really appreciate it. And till the next time.
Thanks for spending time with us.